Hello, and welcome to the History of the Early Church, Episode 24, Origins Contemporaries. Last episode, we began our discussion of the life and thought of the great Origen of Alexandria. Today, we take a broader look at the wider Christian world in which Origen operated. Since we last left Origen back in Caesarea in 234 AD, I'm going to try to keep the content of this episode from going beyond that chronological point. First things first, we need to reorient ourselves with the imperial situation of the Roman Empire. For detailed coverage of the following, see episodes 102 to 105 of the History of Rome. The last emperor we discussed at length was Septimius Severus, who may or may not have authorized a general persecution of Christian converts. Severus died in 211 and left the empire to his two sons, Caracalla and Geta. Caracalla soon murdered his brother Geta and began his reign of cruelty and terror. For our purposes, two events are of significance from the reign of Caracalla. First, as we saw last episode, Caracalla massacred the citizens of Alexandria in 215, which is what forced Origen to flee the city and head north to Palestine. The other major event occurred earlier, in 212, when Caracalla issued the Antonine Constitution. This law made all inhabitants of the empire, except slaves, Roman citizens, regardless of their social status or where they lived. For the church, this now meant that the majority of its members were Romans, at least in the legal sense. Caracalla was eventually assassinated in 217, and after a brief detour and civil war, the dynasty of Septimius Severus regained the imperial throne. The next Severan emperor was Caracalla's cousin Elagabalus, who reigned between 218 and 222. He attempted to coerce the whole Roman Empire into worshipping the Syrian sun god El-Gabal. This, along with his eastern and morally depraved lifestyle, brought about his eventual assassination. After that, Alexander Severus, cousin of Elagabalus, was raised to the purple. Despite his young age, he proved to be a moderate and temperate ruler. Under Alexander, Christians experienced a degree of Roman tolerance and acceptance they had not felt since before Nero. Christianity in all forms was still technically illegal, but it appears the emperor was personally inclined towards Christians. His dominating mother, Julia Mammaea, had, after all, invited Origen to visit her while the imperial court was in Antioch. The Historia Augusta, for all it's worth, even records that Alexander enrolled Jesus among the gods he worshipped. Eusebius also states that many Christians were members of Alexander's administration and household. The days of being outside the mainstream and regarded as a diabolical cult were starting to fade away. It looked as if Roman-Christian relations would reach a balance point. But, as we all know, this did not happen. Eventually, the exclusivist monotheism of the church would hit that brick wall of pagan devotion to the peace of the gods. With the wider imperial situation now in view, it's time to take our tour of the Christian East in the days of Origen. By 234, after much conflict and hard feelings, Origen was permanently settled in Caesarea, Palestine. Never again did the Alexandrian scholar return to his home city. Back in Alexandria, the life of the church continued on without Origen. The catechetical school still remained, and was now headed entirely by Origen's pupil, Heraclius. Origen's section of more advanced studies was not continued, however. probably owing to the fact that it was largely the product of his own theology. And the bishops of Alexandria wanted to have more direct control over the instruction of the faithful. This was for both the protection of the bishop's position and the pastoral concern to guard the laity from heresy. It was about this time that Demetrius died and was succeeded by Heraclius. This would set a precedent for the rest of the century, as future bishops of Alexandria would formally be heads of the catechetical school. Heraclius appointed as the new head of the school his eventual successor, Dionysius, who will in time become known as Dionysius the Great. Heraclius, though he had once been Origen's friend and pupil, followed the ruling of Demetrius and would not allow Origen to return to Alexandria. The Palestine that Origen now resided in had a solid Christian presence, particularly in two cities, the provincial capital of Caesarea and Jerusalem, or, as it was called then, Aelia Capitolina. Since its refounding as Aelia Capitolina, Jerusalem had been a major center of Greek Gentile Christianity. However, much of the early history of this community is unknown. Eusebius gives a list of bishops, but it is not until the tenure of Narcissus that we have any detailed information. Narcissus became bishop in 185 AD, 50 years after the Bar Kokhba revolt. About a decade into his reign, Narcissus participated in the Quartodeciman controversy, along with his fellow bishop Theophilus of Caesarea. Narcissus was well known for both his ascetical life and the miracles he worked. Eusebius recounts one particular example where, during the Easter vigil, the Church of Jerusalem had run out of oil to light its lamps. Narcissus instructed those in charge of the lights to bring him water. When they did so, he said a prayer over it and proceeded to pour it out onto the lamps. Miraculously, it had been changed to oil, and the lamps were all lit once again. The great holiness and erudition of Narcissus unfortunately attracted enemies. Envious and insecure, these enemies tragically came from within Narcissus's congregation. These three men decided to destroy Narcissus's reputation by spreading lies and slander about the bishop. In an attempt to prove their allegations were true, the three men swore oaths, each claiming that if they were lying, a specific punishment would befall each of them. Eusebius says no one believed a word these men said, but Narcissus was genuinely hurt by these false allegations. This, combined with his desire for the ascetical life, led Narcissus to forsake his episcopal duties and flee to the desert where he lived for many years. Soon, one by one, each of the three slanderers succumbed to the punishments they prepared for themselves. The first died with his family in a house fire, the second from disease, and the third, though finally confessing his lies, went blind. With Narcissus still missing, however, the Church of Jerusalem needed a new man to sit on the throne of James. A quick succession of three bishops followed before, at long last, Narcissus returned to Aelia Capitolina. The people rejoiced at the return of their ascetical and wonder-working bishop. Eventually, Narcissus grew old and had difficulty performing his clerical duties. But, Eusebius says, the hand of God remedied this. A bishop in Cappadocia named Alexander, who happens to be the first bishop in Cappadocia that we know of, received a vision in a dream that instructed him to go to Jerusalem and worship and see the holy sites. Eusebius relates that the people of the city also received a vision which told him that their next bishop was arriving. When Alexander came to Jerusalem, the people would not let him go, and so he became the first coadjutor bishop in recorded history. Alexander assisted Narcissus for the rest of his life, and when the latter died at the age of at least 116, Alexander became the new bishop of Jerusalem. Alexander was familiar with the Church of Alexandria, for he was a friend of Pantaenus and Clement. Clement, in fact, after his departure from Alexandria, became a presbyter in Palestine. He carried to the Church of Antioch a letter from Alexander commending them for choosing a good successor to the departed Serapion, the bishop of Antioch who had exposed the heretical gospel of Peter. Alexander was also a good friend of Origen. It was Alexander, along with Theoctistus of Caesarea, who made Origen first a teacher, and then a presbyter. It was also Alexander who wrote to Demetrius defending Origen. Alexander also built a library in Jerusalem, which scholars like Origen would find most useful. The tenure of Alexander represents a time when the bishops of Jerusalem and Caesarea were of accord with one another. Neither appears to have cared much which of them was the top Christian leader in Palestine. These happy relations would eventually be undone in the 4th century, when the two sees clashed over which of them was to be acknowledged as the ruling bishop of the Holy Land. Another famous Christian from Palestine at this time was Julius Africanus. Julius Africanus has got to be one of the most interesting figures from the pre-Constantinian church. He defies virtually everything one would expect about a Christian living in this era. Despite his name, Africanus was from Palestine. In particular, Jerusalem was his home city. As a member of the great church, it seems likely his personal bishop was Alexander. Africanus was a layman. He was not an apologist, or an ascetic, or a theologian. He was very much an intellectual polymath, quite at home in both Christian and pagan circles. Unfortunately, like so many others we've come across, his life is poorly documented and has to be pieced together from various disparate and fragmentary sources. Nevertheless, the snippets of biographical information we do have paint a very unique and interesting picture. In his younger days, Africanus fought in the army of Septimius Severus in the emperor's war against Parthia. Later, he served Severus's son Caracalla as a diplomatic official. He was sent to Edessa, capital of the Mesopotamian kingdom of Osroene. We first encountered Edessa and Osroene back in episode 6, when we discussed the legendary story of King Abgar V, his correspondence with Jesus, and Abgar's baptism by the apostle Thaddeus. Osroene was a key border kingdom between Rome and Parthia up to the early 3rd century. The kings of Osroene during Africanus' time were Abgar VIII and Abgar IX Severus, taking the name of his imperial patrons. These monarchs are often thought to have been well disposed towards Christianity, and thus may have given rise to the legend that they, or their ancestor Abgar V, converted to the faith. Certainly by the late 2nd and early 3rd century, a substantial Christian minority was present in Edessa. The first Catholic bishop of the city we know of for sure is Palet, who was ordained by Serapion of Antioch, and came to the city around 201 AD. From an early point, the Syriac Christians on the other side of the Euphrates had a connection to the Church of Antioch. The Christians of Edessa also apparently had a church building, which was unfortunately destroyed about the same time Palet came to the city. Like elsewhere in the ancient world, the Christians of Edessa were composed of various sects, including Catholics, Marcionites, and Gnostics. During Africanus' stay in Edessa, he conversed with the royal family and engaged in recreation with the locals. Africanus also pursued intellectual matters. He studied the large literary collections of Edessa, including literature in Semitic languages. He also met the local Christian philosopher Bardazin. More on him in a bit. After his military career, Africanus studied in Alexandria under Heraclius. He then shows up in the city of Emmaus, in Palestine, from where he was sent on an embassy to Rome to get the city elevated in status and rebuilt. The emperor, Alexander Severus, accepted his petition, and Emmaus was rebuilt as Nicopolis. While in Rome, Africanus also built a library for the emperor near the Parthenon. Clearly, Africanus, though a Christian, was quite comfortable with the pagan world he lived in. One of his major literary works demonstrates this, the Kestoi. The Kestoi is a book of miscellaneous topics from military tactics to alchemy and magic. Africanus did not regard war, and using all means possible to win a war, incompatible with his Christian faith. He also did not see the magic he used as demonic occultism, but regarded it as a medical remedy and acceptable science. The Kestoi may lead one to expect Africanus was a member of a heretical sect, but as we shall see in a future episode from his correspondence with Origen, he was not. He devoted much effort to biblical and historical studies of interest to the Christian faith. For instance, he proposed that a levirate marriage explain the divergent genealogies of Christ in the Gospels of Matthew and Luke. He also produced the first Christian chronography, a chronicle synchronizing biblical, Christian, and secular history. The chronography would later prove to be a goldmine of information when Eusebius composed his own chronicle and church history. With that, we shall leave Julius Africanus for now. The last major contemporary of Origen we shall discuss is the Syriac Christian philosopher Africanus met in Edessa, Bardazin. Like Africanus, Bardazin is another early Christian figure whose life and thought has to be pieced together from various sources. Bardazin was probably born in the reign of Antoninus Pius and died during the principate of Elagabalus. Bardazin was an erudite and prominent thinker in Edessa. He was also well-connected, an archer in the royal retinue, and, according to some sources, he received an embassy from India on behalf of the emperor Elagabalus, which exposed the philosopher to Indian ideas and customs. Where he was on the spectrum of Christian sects is not clear. Eusebius says he rejected Valentinian Gnosticism for a more orthodox faith. He argued against the Marcionites in his region. Much of what we know about Bardazin's beliefs come from a work composed by one of his students, the Book of the Laws of the Countries, which portrays Bardazin defending free will against Babylonian astrology and the unity of God against a Marcionite. The work shows heavy influence of Greek philosophy, as well as a great familiarity with various Near Eastern and even Indian traditions. However, though he rejected Gnostic predestination and the idea that creation was evil, Bardazin also held to some Gnostic ideas, such as Docetic Christology, rejecting that Christ had really suffered in the flesh on the cross. Thus, Bardazin and his followers held to their own distinctive theology. Even in the 4th century, Orthodox combatants of heresy would view them as a distinct Bardazinite sect. We have now covered Origen's major Eastern contemporaries. Next episode, we shall return to the West, to the city of Rome. There, we shall meet Origen's most famous contemporary, Hippolytus, the first so-called anti-pope. As we shall see next time, the Church of Rome in the late 2nd and early 3rd century was in massive turmoil over the nature of the relationship between Jesus Christ and God the Father.